Thanks for tuning in to Christian Devotion Speak Up, the show where Christian leaders come on and share their saving knowledge of Jesus Christ and how He brought them to serve the kingdom in a big way. I'm your host, Scott McCausey, and I welcome you to stick around and hang out with us. We've got a great show planned just for you. So for the next 60 minutes, turn off the television, turn up your computer speakers, and get ready to learn about Christ through our guest testimony and our ministry. This is Christian Devotion Speak Up. This is Scott McCausey with Christian Devotion Speak Up, and this afternoon I have a man who needs little introduction, but I'll give it a go anyway. Kevin Sorbo is going to be joining us here. He played Hercules from Hercules, The Legendary Journeys, as well as Captain Dylan Hunt of Andromeda. He's filmed bunches of movies, including one we're going to highlight tonight, Abel's Field. He's also an author, spokesperson for World Fit for Kids. Kevin, welcome to our show.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
I'm glad you could be. And, you know, what we always do is we dive into our guest testimony from the very beginning. Tonight will be no different. I'd love for you to share a little bit about your life as a kid, maybe some of the things you did, obviously because of some of the parts that you've played in films. Sports was, I'm assuming, a pretty big role for you.
Yeah, I grew up in a small town. It's called Mound, Minnesota. It's just outside of Minneapolis, about 25 miles west of it. And it was on the beautiful shores of Lake Minnetonka. We were home to Tonka Toys. That was the big industry in my little town. So
awesome.
Pretty much everybody was either like working at local stores or they were in the teaching profession or they worked there. That was pretty much made up the town. And I grew up in a little dead-end neighborhood there. We had seven homes in the neighborhood and everybody had anywhere from 3 to 5 kids. And so it was a huge neighborhood for children to just run around and we played everything. And I had certainly a couple older brothers that paved the way for me. And I loved football, basketball, baseball, and my father was a teacher. In the summers, he worked at a golf course, so I started playing golf at a very young age just because it was there.
You know, okay.
We could never afford golf on a teacher's salary, really. So since he worked there, it was free. You know, we took advantage of it, and my older brothers and myself got really good at it and ended up playing the golf teams in high school as well. But, I grew up, a great little town, great people, great community, great coaches, teachers. Very tight-knit community and very supportive, and sports was a huge part of my life.
Well, that's pretty cool. As a matter of fact, this past year I had Jim Kelly on the program, of course, played for the Buffalo Bills, and he kind of described the same kind of thing going on. He had lots of brothers that at times beat up on him, and he did his best to do that right back, but it kind of culminated in such a way that really grasped some, you know, brotherly love as well as really built him to the person he was going to be. Did a lot of that happen within your family dynamic growing up as well?
Yeah, I'm the fourth of five kids. There's four boys. My sister's in the middle. I got a younger brother, and I had the same thing. You know, my older brothers picked on me and beat I in turn beat up my younger brother.
Yes, yes.
But then all my brothers hated it when I became much taller than the rest of them. I got them back.
Oh, I love it. Now, what about within your home dynamic? Was this a Christ-believing home? Tell us a little bit about the faith that you grew up with.
Yeah, I grew up in a Lutheran household. Both parents, I'm 100% Norwegian. Both grandparents came over in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and from Norway. And the Lutheran faith was obviously very big there. And that's the church I went to all my life. But, I go to a church now called Christian Assembly. It's just really non-denominational.
Okay.
I always thought the Lutheran faith was a little strict. You know, as a kid, I used to ask my mom, I go, is God really that angry? Because we had a fire, and, you know, just the guy in the pulpit was just, everything was a sin in this guy's mind. I was like, I don't think God's that upset about things. We know when we do wrong, we know the difference between right and wrong, and I think that's sort of an inherent thing in most people, hopefully. And, other than that, it's just pure evil if you look at some of the things that have been going on. But, I've always had a faith, so it's never really wavered for me.
Okay. Now, when I grew up, I remember wanting to be a fireman as a little kid. Then I wanted to be an auto worker because that's what my dad did here in Michigan. And as I got older and I loved baseball, I wanted to play for the Tigers. Tell us what you wanted to be growing up and maybe share a little bit about aspiring to accomplish dreams.
I grew up, you know, I'm a Minnesota guy, you're Michigan, so we're all Big Ten here.
I was a
Twins fan, you're a Tiger fan, same conference. I'm a Viking guy, I'm sure you're a Lion person. But,
no, I gave up on the Lions a long time ago.
Well, you know, I wanted to be an actor since I was 11 years of age.
Okay.
I went and saw a play when I was a kid, I was 11 years old, I saw Shakespeare play Merchant of Venice at the Guthrie Theater. The Guthrie Theater is a very famous theater in Minneapolis. A lot of people on Broadway certainly know where it is. And I was always a big fan right away. I told my parents at a young age, I'm going to be an actor, and I got that obligatory, that's nice, dear, from my mom. But, you know, they were still all supportive. Even when I got to college, I had a double major in college in marketing and advertising, but I knew where my heart was and what I was going to eventually do. You know, I said, look, if I'm going to go after a degree, I want a degree that really makes sense.
Sure.
Because, you know, what do you do with a degree in 17th century French art or something like that?
So right, right.
I always tell people that ask me if they go to college, which I said, get a real degree. Get a business degree, get an engineering degree, get a law degree. Get a degree that's actually real and you can do something with it. You know, there's so many liberal arts degrees that just don't amount to nothing for people. And most of the friends I know that got liberal arts degrees don't even do what they got their degree in.
Right, right, exactly. Now, when you went to State College there, did you study acting there?
I had a minor in drama. I was mostly business, marketing, advertising was something I really enjoyed. And I look at that I'm actually doing something with marketing, advertising, because I market and advertise myself. So
absolutely.
I find it useful in this industry of Hollywood, because you do have to, there's so many things you do have to do outside of hopefully getting a decent agent, a decent manager. Good luck finding that. But, you know, a lot of it was just work. You know, the best advice I got was from a friend of mine before I left, when I finished up when I was 22 years old, and he said, remember, it's called show business, not show. And that's always stuck with me, you know.
Right.
Got to treat it like a business, and that's what I did. I went out there, and I realized the odds were against me. That, you know, just the chance of getting anything in Hollywood is slim to none and impossible, but I didn't let that, you know, slow me down. I just used that as fuel for the fire for me when everybody slammed the door on me. And, you know, you get a show like Hercules that goes 7 years and becomes the most watched TV show in the world. Then I got a show, Andromeda, right after that. And that had a 5-year run, was the number one show in first run syndication. So, you know, I've been very fortunate to keep working and keep working. And since those shows, I've shot about 40 movies. So I've been staying busy.
Yeah, you definitely have. We're going to talk about that here in a second, too. But, you know, you talked a little bit about your faith and growing up in your home. When did you feel that actual pull to Christ and accept him as your Savior? Was this at a young age? Was this teen years? When exactly did this happen?
Well, you know, like I said, I went to church ever since I was born. So, I mean, it was always part of my life.
Okay.
So the belief, I never consider myself like a reborn Christian. But if I want to look at one particular point where I was a little older in my life and started to maybe understand more about what religion was, because basically, what's a 40-year-old know? Except Santa Claus is coming out of Christmas or something. It was when I was 13 years old, and I went to a Billy Graham crusade. I went there with, there was a church group that went, a big group of us from our communion class, and it was an amazing night for me. I still remember it. It was at a fairground in St. Paul, Minnesota, and Billy was speaking. We were pretty far away. There was like 60,000 people there.
Mm-hmm.
But he asked at the end, which he always does, if you want to come up and talk to somebody, come on up. And I went up there with a friend of mine. I said, I'm going to go up. He looked at me and goes, I want to go up too. And I said, so we walked up there together. I think be a crutch for each other in a way. And we sat down in the grass and talked to this guy for about 40 minutes or so, 45 minutes. And it was a beautiful, hot August night. I loved it. Humidity high. The moon is up full. I mean, it's just something that, as a 13-year-old, it's never left me. It's just stuck with me all my life. And I know that was a pivotal point in me. And, you know, do I have my ups and downs? I go, yeah, I think that's life. You know, that's what hopefully forgiveness is for when you ask
Amen.
For it. So I've not led a perfect life, certainly, but I've never really wavered from my belief in God or Jesus, certainly.
Yeah, definitely. Now, one thing that I appreciate about your character and the character you play in a lot of movies is kind of the strong alpha male guy that, you know, guys root for, you know. Tell us when you began working out or taking care of your body, or was this always a priority because you played sports growing up?
You know, my older brothers would tell me when they were in college, when I was like in 10th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade, they would tell me that start lifting weights now. And I was like, my mindset was like, no, if I lift weights, I'll lose my touch in basketball. Because
Yes.
The reality is, as long as you're lifting and shooting at the same time, you know, it took me years to figure that out, obviously. But
right.
I didn't start hitting the weights until the end of my senior year in high school.
Okay.
And I regretted not doing it, listening to them. But, you know, that's what little brothers do, what their older brothers tell them to do stuff. You kind of dig your heels in and go, no, I know what I'm doing. And, you know, the reality is they were right all along. But,
yeah.
Yeah, I lifted pretty heavy through college. I got up to about 230 pounds, and I was lifting heavy and enjoying the workouts. I liked it. Still playing basketball a lot, and then when I moved to LA, I never stopped working out. I always worked out. I dropped back down about 220, but then when Hercules came along, I put another 10 pounds on again. I fluctuated between probably 225 and 235 in Hercules. Really depended on how much I was eating in the show.
Yeah.
But I worked out 2 hours every single day after those 12 and 14-hour days. I had a long day. I put it to any actor in the history of Hollywood that worked harder than I did during those 7 years on Hercules. I worked my tail off.
Yeah, no doubt. Now I've had a...
Yeah, I'm not complaining. I loved it. I had a great time.
Exactly. And you can tell by your voice and the inflection in it. Now, I've had a number of actors on the program, and they describe... The beginning is working lots of bit pieces, lots of extras on TV shows and movies, and doing this every day. Was this how it happened to you when you were first getting started?
You know, I was very fortunate to go out there, and I started working really well in commercials. I shot
okay.
a lot of commercials. I never had the bartender wait tables or do any of that stuff when I moved to L.A. I was making very good money. I was shooting commercials all
yeah.
the time. I shot about 150 commercials between 1986 and 1993.
Wow.
The year that I got Hercules, and I was getting, I did some pilots, I did some guest spots, I never did any extra work. That didn't interest me at all, and it just was plugging away until I finally got Hercules. And Hercules just came at me as a 5 2-hour movies to be shot for 1 year in New Zealand, shooting 2 months for each movie.
Right.
And I knew by the second movie, I called my agent that night. I said, you know, they're going to make this a new series. I know it. And they said, how do you know? And I said, because there's nothing like it on TV right now. Now is everything. I mean, there's so much comic book stuff out now that's been going on forever. But I feel like we were sort of the front runner for it in a way that sort of kicked it off, because there's so many television shows now that sort of copy the formula of what Hercules are.
Yeah. You know, for many folks who don't have a good understanding, and I want to talk a little bit about, belief in God once again, but for a lot of folks who have no idea what prayer is, other than the fact you do it when you face a trial, and that's okay, because, Scripture tells us we're invited to do that and come to Christ when we have these problems, but we also must remember to give thanks, when things are going well. Do you remember giving thanks for him placing you in this spot to become Hercules, and for also giving you these gifts of acting?
Well, it's funny, Asher, because I remember specific moments during those 7 years in Hollywood before I got Hercules, about 6.5 years.
Okay.
And yeah, you go through frustration because you get a pilot, they don't pick it up. You get down the last two guys on a new TV series or a movie, and they pick the other guy.
Right.
There's always reasons. There's so many weird reasons why you get jobs or why you don't get jobs in Hollywood. Because the whole thing about Hollywood is about rejection. It's about elimination.
Yeah.
Walk into the room and they don't look at you like, what's great about this guy? They look at you and go, what don't I like about him? Things negative in Hollywood. It's a very weird place. It's so many yucky things about it, for lack of a better word. But
yeah.
Fortunately, I love acting too much. I love doing what I'm doing. But I would pray. I would say, please give me a job. I would sit there and do that. But what I would do is say, give me the confidence.
Yes.
Lead me in the right place. Let me be happy with what I do when I walk into these rooms and meet with these producers and directors and casting people. Let me walk out of the room and not be upset with myself.
Yeah.
It was about a 2-year period before I got Hercules where I really put my faith in that completely. And I walked in and out of these places, and if they didn't pick me, they didn't pick me. And I didn't go crazy. Because actors could all write the same book. I know that I'm not the only actor that got in his car after they would leave an audition and would chew on their steering wheel as they're driving home in
yes.
horrible traffic.
Yes.
Why did I do this? Why did I do that? And I stopped doing that. And the minute I stopped doing that, I started getting closer and closer in jobs. I started relaxing more. I started getting so much more confidence. And I remember about 4 months before I got Hercules, I remember asking God. I just told God. I didn't ask him. I just told him. I said, God, I'm ready. I'm ready for the next step. And,
yeah.
And it happened. I just, it's that let go, let God mentality, and it certainly worked.
That's so true as well. There are so many people out there that struggle, especially we guys. I mean, we want to make it work, and we want to do this, and we want to do it that way, and we want to fix this, and whatever the case might be. But in the end, giving God that control, which he already has anyway, is so supreme. And I think that a lot of jobs, a lot of good things can happen once we completely give over that control. Would you agree with that assessment?
Oh, yeah. And I've realized, I still go through periods where you worry and get upset.
For sure.
But most of us, most of the things in life that we worry about don't happen.
Yeah, Yeah.
We spend so much time stressing over things that never, ever happen.
So true.
Realize, my God, what wasted energy. What wasted bad, you know, vibes I'm putting through my body, because all that stress and all that worry, you know, causes ulcers, it causes high blood pressure, it causes all kinds of different things in people. And it's just, you know, it sort of formulates itself in different ways in people's bodies. And it's like, my God, you know, I sat and worry about that forever and nothing happened that I was worrying about. And it is that sort of just relax and just let life happen. But, you know, it's hard for us to do that, because I think a lot of it comes with the media. I mean, you watch television.
Yeah.
And you watch anything in the news, everything in the news is to keep us in fear,
yeah.
Keep us worried about stuff, to create something out of nothing. I'm sitting there watching ESPN today. I was at the gym working out, and they have this big thing on this the linebacker from Notre Dame.
Mateo, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, about this whole thing about, you know, this girlfriend that never existed.
Yes.
And they're creating news out of nothing, saying, how's this going to affect the draft on this kid? How's it going to affect him? He's a good football player, and any team that wants him is going to take him, and he'll probably have a great career. It's not going to affect him.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what they do. They want to create something out of nothing. And
no, they do.
For weather, for crying out loud. I was just in Dallas. I just shot a couple of public service announcements for the American Heart Association and the American Stroke Association.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sitting there watching. I was flipping channels at night. I got to the weather channel. They had tornadoes on. I'm fascinated with tornadoes growing up in Minnesota, and you get them in Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
And I just started watching it. And the guy in the news says, okay, now that was a Category 3, but look what would have happened if it would have been a Category 3. It wasn't a Category 3.
Right.
You know, it's just, there's this constant fear factor that one is living in. And just, there's just so much control over people. And a lot of people become these sheep. And they just don't know what to do with their lives unless they hear it from the news.
Yeah, yeah. So true. Now, I want to talk more about the adventure beginning here with Hercules, because, I mean, like you mentioned, this thing boomed up to a number one TV series, and I'm assuming all the moving and traveling you had to do was arduous. I mean, New Zealand to the United States. You already mentioned long hours and working out was part of the job. Tell us how you dealt with this sort of stress, because this eventually led to an aneurysm, and the term that many are familiar with, a stroke.
Well, you know, I when I got the job, the only thing I had in my life at that time that was difficult, well, I had a girlfriend at that time. You know, she lived in L.A., and I was about to go to New Zealand. But I was very focused, you know, and in a way I was very selfish with my career. I wanted this to happen, but I looked at it, I was like, you know, I'm going to get 1 year in New Zealand. When I went down there, initially I wasn't thinking this was going to turn into a series. As
right.
I told you earlier, I knew that a second movie was going to happen. But I didn't mind the move. Yeah, eventually it did break up that relationship just because of the distance. You know, you're 7,000 miles apart.
Right.
But I just said, you know, the focus was there. I loved my crew. Peter Jackson used to come up on the set to check out on everybody each year, because New Zealand had never had something like this before.
Yes.
We were an amazing training ground, not only for myself, you know, because this was my big break, but, you know, for people from New Zealand to get created acting jobs, created stars out of people that never would have had a career otherwise. I mean, you look at Lucy Lawless, she never would have had a career if it wasn't for Hercules.
Right.
Xena was her third-year spinoff, and she ended up getting that part just sort of randomly. They just kind of cast her to get the tax credit, and it ended up working out pretty well.
Wow.
So it's amazing how things work, but for me, I loved working the hours I worked. I mean, it was ultimately ridiculous for me to live off 4.5 hours of sleep for 5 years going into the sixth season of Hercules, where the aneurysm in my body that had formed in my left shoulder, that unbeknownst to me, when it finally completely opened up, sending hundreds of clots in my arm and 3 clots into my brain and giving me 3 strokes,
yeah,
it was certainly a wake-up call. But I think I should go back just a little bit to tell you about the feelings I had in my shoulder leading up to it. We're about three months left in season 5, and
okay.
I was also gearing up to do this movie for Universal Studios. I was going to shoot in Atlanta on my hiatus, but I had this shoulder pain that was just killing me. I couldn't figure it out. When I got to L.A. after we finished season 5, my doctor checked out, found his lump, and he said, I want to do a biopsy on this. Well, before he had to do the biopsy that day, I went to see my chiropractor.
Sure.
And I told him what the doctor said. And while I'm laying on the table, there's a voice inside my head that says, don't let him crack your neck.
Mm-hmm.
I opened my eyes. I looked at my doctor. I've been going to 8 years, my chiropractor. And I said, what did you say? Because I didn't say anything.
Oh, wow.
And I closed my eyes again. And within a minute later, the voice said again, do not let him crack your neck. And I'm thinking to myself, why am I hearing this voice? Why is this voice saying, don't let him crack your neck?
Right.
This guy 8 years. He knows I don't like my neck cracked. He's never cracked my neck because I don't like it.
Right.
He cracks my neck.
Oh, boy.
And I sat got up and I said, why did you do that? He said, I thought you needed it. I told him, well, you know, I don't like it. Well, within 2 minutes, I had 3 blood clots going in my brain, and the cracking of the neck forced those blood clots in the aneurysm of my left shoulder to go backwards and basically act like salmon swimming upstream.
Oh, wow.
And 2 of the clots went to my balance center, 1 went to my vision, and I pretty much spent the next 3 years of my life fighting myself back to get to where I am today, where I can function again. But I spent the next 4 months learning to walk again.
Wow.
I couldn't even stand up to walk. I would just fall over.
It's crazy.
And it was, went to my balance center. I lost 10% of vision in both eyes, which I still have to this day, but I've, you know, adapted to that. But, it was huge. When I went back to New Zealand 4 months later, I went from a 14-hour workday to 1-hour day. That's all I could get. They wanted to keep the show going. They
right.
just left my contract. Mm-hmm. They wanted to keep it going, and I wanted to keep it going. I wanted to have, you know, something in my life to keep myself pushing forward. So it was quite a story, and I'm glad I finally wrote a book on it.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the aspects I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, because you mentioned this, the episode that you had, was around this time, or I think during this season 5, or maybe it was 4, you met what was going to be your wife. Tell us about how she helped support you through this difficult time, because here on Speak Up, we talk a lot about husband-wife teams. I bring them on, and we talk about how they support one another's ministry, because I'm guessing she had a huge factor in your life at this time.
Oh, massively. I mean, she could have walked away, and I would have blamed her at the time. I don't know what my recovery was going to be.
Yeah.
Number one, I was shocked that, you know, Universal Studios, they want to say they care about their actors, but no, we were a cash cow. They don't care about the show. But you know, on the flip side of that, I was grateful for it because it gave me a focus. It gave me something to look forward to say, okay, I don't know where my career is going to go right now, but at least I know I got 2 years left in it that I can push and push and push until I get better. But Sam, my wife, we were 4 months away from being married, and before we even said, for better or worse, she got the for better or worse. And
yeah.
But she's going to leave me. She's going to take off. But she pretty much put her life and career on hold to be my caregiver and push me. Not that I needed to be pushed. I definitely did far more than what doctors wanted me to do in terms of my recovery.
Yeah.
But I you know, I just said, there's no way I'm going to live my life like this. There's just no way. I had dizzy spells 24 hours a day. I had vertigo. I had the sensation I was falling backwards. Doesn't matter if I was standing, sitting, laying down. Didn't matter. I felt like I was falling backwards and
wow.
That lasted for over a year. I had buzzing in the back of my brain, just this low generator sound that wouldn't stop. That lasted for about a year and a half. I mean, all these things that just beat the heck out of me. Migraines all of a sudden that I never had before. I mean,
right.
But I just kept pushing myself. But she was there to push and push. Give me hope. And even though I went through huge anger, I mean, they told her too, they said part of the stroke thing, people got quicker to anger, and I know I certainly was. And she would be there and just take my stupid verbal abuse and then put it right back in my face. She just put it right back in it because she's a tough New Yorker. So
yeah, yeah.
She didn't put up with any of that I was dishing out. And as much as I wanted to fight it, I was so grateful that she was there. And, she's the reason the book was written. I mean, for years I put it off, years and years and years, and finally she said, you got to write this book. And the hardcover came out a year ago, and the paperback just came out recently. And it's been amazing, the response from people. I've been speaking at neurological institutes and hospitals and bookstores. I've been all over the place. It's been pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a very powerful story. And I'm just sitting here envisioning these 3 years where you're probably sitting on the couch because you literally can't function. And that had to have, I mean, going from a 12, 14-hour day to just sitting there because you can't literally function had to have really forced you to reevaluate maybe the person that you were, maybe the person that God was making you. Did those kind of things come into your mindset? Did you talk to God about these things?
Oh, yeah. Well, I railed against him initially. I blamed him.
Ah, yes.
You know, and I was thinking, went through it with the steps you go through. You know, why me? What's going on? I mean, here I was 38 years old, in better shape than most guys in their 20s
yes.
who are athletes. You know, I mean, I was in great shape. And all of a sudden, I have this happen to go from a guy that's in physically peak condition, as far as I was concerned, to a guy that could barely move around. Brutal on the ego. And I remember, it probably was a couple weeks after I got out of the hospital. I was in the hospital for a few weeks in ICU. When I finally got out, I remember just looking at the window one night and just, you know, looking at the moon, basically howling at the moon. I just talked to God and I cried. I wept and wept. I felt like somebody had died. I felt like my best friend had died.
Mm.
And I knew that I would never be the same person that I was.
Right.
And I think I was saying goodbye to myself, having my own personal funeral for myself. And it changed me. There's no question it changed me. And I realized that that voice was God. I know that was God's voice. He was warning me about the neck crack. He was warning me, and I listened to him. And, you know, the next thing, that what I've learned out of this point of editing is that you listen to that voice. You know, I've got atheist friends who said, oh, that wasn't God. And I go, call it what you want.
Yeah.
But I said, even you as an atheist, in your life, you have walked down the street at 2 in the morning when you're heading back home and you want to take a shortcut down an alleyway, and something tells you, don't go that way.
Right.
And you don't go that way. So you can call it what you want.
That's right.
But
that's
that
right.
Place is real, guys, and it's there. It's just like you know the difference between right and wrong. You know what's good. You know what's bad.
Yep, definitely.
And when you do something bad, something tells you what you did was bad. What do you think that was?
That's right.
I my science friends and all that, I go, you know, you can tell me all you want that he doesn't exist, but you can't prove that God doesn't exist.
Right. Absolutely.
And I always tell him, I go, look, if I'm wrong, I've lost nothing. But if I'm right, I've gained the world.
Amen.
Gained the universe.
Amen. And, you know, and I want to tell listeners, the book is called True Strength. I don't think we've thrown that out there yet. And listeners who do not have the book, have not gotten the book, go to Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. You go to Kevin's website, kevinsorbo.net. And, Kevin, if you had the opportunity since this book came out to really talk and discuss about these specific topics to maybe those who don't believe, maybe there are those that are just really struggling, where you have the opportunity to encourage them through this trial.
Well, and also one more thing, they go to TrueStrengthBook.com, TrueStrengthBook, one word, .com.
Got it.
And there's also information where to get besides Amazon bookstore near you. They can also see a video on it.
Okay.
But as I said, I've been talking to neurological institutes around the country. I've been to hospitals. I've been talking to all kinds of different people. And it's amazing that people have come up to me, people from, you know, car crash survivors, heart attack survivors, stroke survivors, whatever it may be, people that hit that road, because we are going to hit a road one day that we know is there. We just don't know when we're going to hit it. We don't want to hit it. We don't expect when it's going to hit it. But when it happens, when you take that fork in the road, all of a sudden your life is in trouble, or it happens to a friend or family member, that's what this book is for. This book is about inspiration. It's about pushing past the limitations that doctors, the medical field, family, friends put on us. Because doctors told me after 8 months, they said, whatever recovery you reach after 8 months, that's it for you. That's pretty much the average. You have to live that the rest of your life. And I'm like, by the end of 8 months, I still wasn't doing too good. And I said, okay, there's just no way. I mean, I tell doctors, I said, that's why they call what you guys do a practice, because you don't know everything.
Yes, I love it.
So, and how many times have you had in your career that you thought, my gosh, this guy was supposed to die, and he didn't.
Right.
Yeah, I said the best thing doctors can do for people is, be upfront and be honest about things, but also be hopeful with them.
Yes.
You know, I think the biggest thing for people, I mean, for me, I couldn't move that well. It was horrific. For me to crawl out of bed those first few months and even get to the bathroom to take a pee, that was like a And I sat on the TV, and I didn't have time before the strokes to watch TV. I was working too long.
Right.
I started watching comedies, and laughter truly is the best medicine. I wanted to take my mind off my mind, and I wanted to. And I know that helped me. A lot of those things helped me, but it was also, I started meditation. I started yoga. I started acupuncture. I started all kinds of Eastern medicines as well, homeopathic medicine. I was willing to do anything. I even saw a shrink for a couple times.
Wow.
So it was, to me, it was just helpful to just constantly get things out there and talk about it and face it and confront it and not pretend that it wasn't happening to me. And that's what I tell people. And I get people come up to me at these events, I'm telling you, whether they believe in God or whether they don't, they say, you know what, it's something. And what you just gave me, you gave me hope, and you gave me something to push forward to. And they're crying. And these people, I mean, I met this young kid, 27 years old, had a stroke, left side, he could barely move his arm, you know. And he's limping along, he can walk, but he's got a limp. And he was crying, he was in tears. And, you know, it's amazing when they tell you that the book has motivated them, has pushed them to want to get better. So it's been pretty incredible.
That is awesome. God uses, he has lots of tools at his disposal, and he uses we who are his tools to accomplish gigantic goals. And I'm thankful you've been placed in situations where you can be just that for other people. You mentioned something fun that I just want to throw out there, because I haven't seen a movie where you've done this particular thing. Have you done comedies before? Because you've got a pretty good sense of humor during this interview.
Well, Hercules actually has a lot of humor in it.
It does. It definitely
does. I mean, the show was what made the show fun for people.
Yes.
Was the humor. And the fight scenes themselves all had humor.
Yes.
You know, I never killed anybody on the show. And, you know, I would throw guys out through, you know, we'd be fighting in a barn. And I'd throw them through the barn wall and they'd be cut out of their body or something. And, I mean, it was the show, I think, besides selling mythology and also had good moral values. The writers always put in great values in there. They had a lot of humor. And I've done a lot of guest spots on sitcoms.
Okay.
From Greg to Two and a Half Men to Gary and Mary, all these different shows. And I did my own pilot for ABC after Andromeda finished. And even though it was the number one tested half-hour pilot, number one tested pilot for ABC, the studio in its infinite wisdom didn't pick it up. So
really?
It was, you know, and the showrunner and then writer was Barry Kemp, who was the head writer on Taxi. He was the creator of Newhart. He was the creator of Coach. With
oh, yeah.
Was a great writer. It drives me crazy to this day. It hurts. It would have been an eight-year hit for ABC. It was called Bobby Cannon. I played a quarterback for the Chicago Bears. And it was like Coach meets Cheers is what it was. It was a very funny half-hour show. And, you know, there's been nothing like it on TV since or after, and it's too bad we didn't get the plug for it.
But that is a bum.
I love doing comedy. I like to throw comedy when I can.
Now, I did not get a chance, Kevin, to talk to you about a lot of different aspects of your ministry, some of the other programs. I'd love to bring you back out and talk about A World Fit for Kids at some point in time. But I have one last question. I'm about, let's see, I don't lift weights. I'm a chemist. I'm about 200 pounds, 43 years old. You and me in an arm wrestling competition, who wins?
We'll have to leave that to our imagination.
Well, I imagine me just wailing you, but I doubt that would actually happen.
Well, we'll talk again. You know, we'll do it in person and have a little tape
on that. I don't know. I think I like it better virtually. Well, Kevin Sorbo, thank you for being with us tonight on Christian Devotion Speak Up, sharing your heart, sharing your ministry, and, hopefully I can get you back on here again with one of the other movies you're highlighting.
Like I said, God's Not Dead is going to come out in the fall, and
okay.
I'd love to come back on and give that a little plug, and... you know, like I said, I got two more coming out, two more faith-based ones. We're going to start shooting this year. One's called Trial by Fire. It's sort of a faith-based Karate Kid, and the other one is called Persecuted, where I play a Billy Graham type of character that gets framed for the murder of a young girl.
Awesome. We'll have you back and have you talk about all those things. Kevin, thank you for joining us tonight on Christian Devotion Speak Up.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a great night.
All